Welcome to the Care What You Wear and So Much More podcast. I'm your host, Jermaine Caprio, and in this episode, I sit down with Danielle Martin, owner and founder of Soap Distillery Chicago. For most, finding a cigarette in the beer you just downed would be enough to make you hurl. But for Danielle, it became an inspiration. That smoky beer taste stuck with her and was so memorable, she created a boozy product line based on it when she launched her company Soap Distillery back in 2012. In this episode, we discuss the lack of diversity in the beauty space and the importance of making a product that isn't just unique, but clean and sustainable. So light up a beer and cigarettes candle and join me in a conversation with Danielle Martin. No hangover guaranteed. Danielle, welcome to the Care What You Wear podcast. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I've been really excited to speak with you because I've been using your soaps and your candles and some of your products for a while now, and I love them.
That's awesome.
They're unique, they're luxurious, they're insanely wonderful. So
I'm so happy to hear that.
Oh, you make a really cool product. Such a cool product. So what were you doing before you launched the Soap Distillery?
So actually, before I launched Soap Distillery, I was working for a pretty major bicycle component manufacturing company.
Really?
Yeah, I was working in the design department of that company. And, you know, that's marketing and design is kind of like what it's not like the reason why I started Soap Distillery, but it was definitely one of the, like, the interest in that was like one of the driving forces behind it. You know, I'm like, not only can I make something, you know, like I love making soap and like I can, you know, obviously like make a little bit of money off of like making soap. But I also really love marketing and design. And I'm like, you know, this is just going to be a really good creative outlet for me.
You were working in bicycles and then you went to teaching yourself how to make soap. And I know that the marketing and the creative part you had in common with what you did in the bike world. But how the heck did you teach yourself to make soap?
So I actually stumbled across like a recipe or like a formulation on a like a, you know, DIY site, you know. And, you know, took a look at it and because I was like, what is soap? You know, like I just went down this long kind of, you know, like rabbit hole trying to figure out what soap actually was. So I'm like, all right, now I know what soap is. And the next step, you know, in this on this website was like, OK, now you know what soap is. Now it's time to make some. And I'm like, OK, well, you know, I'll try it out. Like a lot of people make soap just for fun. You know, I'm like, I'll see what it's all about. And I had actually studied sculpture design when I was in school. I went to the art school, the Art Institute of Chicago. So I really like doing stuff with my hands. And, you know, I had a desk job for a while. So when I had gotten back to doing something with my hands, I was like, holy moly, like, this is all I want to do. I just want to make soap every day.
That's so fun. Yeah. So it went from being kind of a hobby and something fun to your business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was the demands, you know, it was the customers coming out and, you know, just showing appreciation for what I'm doing. And, you know, I think the first show that I had was in Pilsen in Chicago. And I remember being out there and there was like a fairly large, a higher number of people of color that was shopping at this event. And I can't even tell you, I mean, like more than half of them were just happy to see a Black woman there, you know,
so
like
cool.
That's what, yeah, I mean, it that's what, like being able to connect with the customers in a way that was, you know, somewhat unfamiliar and not as common for them was huge, you know, and people came in just through that connection and then they started picking up soaps and smelling them and stuff. And you know, they're, oh, like you're not just selling like the fact that like you look like me, like you're selling this really good, you know, soap. And I'm like,
good stuff.
If you think so, yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I've done those craft fairs and they can be, they can be kind of vanilla, if you know what I'm saying. And you get there and you walk around.
Which isn't a problem. Like that's not problematic in itself. You know, like there are plenty of talented. I just want to make sure that that's clear, because I feel like people, you know, sometimes listen to like Black people talk about like doing stuff like this. And it's like, no one is saying that no one doesn't belong. Like there's so much talent out there. Right. We just want to see that talent be like a little bit more inclusive, you know, like we want to see talented people of all colors, you know, and that's kind of what I was trying to bring, you know, to that scene, was just to expand it a little bit more. And now when you go to craft shows in Chicago, it's like you see so many more Black people and Latinx people. And it, I mean, it is just amazing.
Well, it's diversity. And that's what I was getting at, is that, you know, like I've been doing them for 20 some years. And I remember walking in and just thinking, I'm looking for something that might represent Pilsen, say, in Chicago, or something that might represent like this little small town or whatever. And it turned into kind of the same stuff all the time. And not that there's anything wrong with that if it's selling and people are seeking that, but that's where I was going, is just, you know, it's good to have that mix of product. And every person, regardless of color, brings something different or unique to that market.
Absolutely. That's the best part of it.
And that's what I love about yours. And I'm gonna, you know where I'm headed. So when I first discovered your cigarettes, your beer and cigarettes line, like your candles and your soap, when I first heard of it, it was through the Unwaste shop. And they were like,
oh, yeah.
And I Jessica's smelled great. It. I love those two. And they've been on the podcast. And when I walked in the door, I was like, they're right. It just smells so good. And I pictured it smelling like my mom coming home from a cocktail party, like, which wasn't really horrible. And when you know, it was kind of comforting in a way, because back then, I'm older, but back then our parents all smoked and, you know, they drink bourbon or Manhattans or whatever.
Everybody smoked. Yeah. It was just cigarettes and martinis, you know?
Yeah. But it's not like you're sniffing stale cigarettes when your candles burn. I can't describe it, but it's a comforting kind of, it's just, you hit it. And so what gave you that inspiration to do that?
You know, the inspiration behind the beer and cigarettes was just, can this be done? You know, like when I, you know, like when I was in college and, you know, had, you know, started drinking, of course, after I was 21, when I was in college.
Of course,
you know, of course,
like all of us, of course.
But I remember, you know, being at a party and like this, and this legit happened to me and it was horrible. But I like went to take a sip of my beer and there is another can on the table that was mostly empty that someone had put a cigarette in, and I took a sip of it. This is the most god awful thing that I think I've ever experienced. But like the crazy thing is that it was like smoky beer, you know, it didn't quite taste the way that people were like would have expected. So for some reason, it just kind of stuck with me over the years. And then once I started making soap, I was like, it would be really funny to make something kind of inspired by that horrible thing that happened to me when I was in college. But I'm like, I have to use like my olfactory skill to make it good. And it was like, you know, I basically created this challenge to myself. And then it took about a year and a half to 2 years of testing it out to really, you know, to really drive it home. It's like a very inclusive scent. Like, I'm not just thinking about like a literal beer and then literal cigarettes. Like, I'm thinking about like what hops smells, you know, when it's growing. I'm thinking about tobacco leaves blowing in the wind. You know, you smell the green of the tobacco, you smell this kind of freshness, like, you know, maybe there are some wildflowers that are somewhere near, like you get like, you know, after a rain, it has like this really nice, like aromatic kind of damp, like note. And I throw all of that into the beer and cigarettes. And that is where that smell comes from.
Well, I'm kind of relieved that it's just not like some leftover old style and a cigarette butt. But
you know, I tried that at first, like I went very literal. First of all, this is amazing that I was like able to do that. But I was like, no one is gonna buy this. It's so bad.
It's not always pleasant, and it doesn't always have like wouldn't always bring up a memory of your mom kissing you goodnight when she gets home from a party. So talk about your olfactory. I know people who deal with a lot of scents and a lot of perfumes in their work. Your nose, how do you keep it? How do you keep that scent sharp and not like, because I know a lot of people get dull to it.
Yeah. The secret is to not be immersed in it all the time. Because I used back in the day when soap distillery first began, you know, I was making soaps in my apartment and, you know, making soaps in my house, you know, and it became more challenging to make blends. I found mm-hmm. myself having to go outside and like I would blend something and then I would take it outside and smell it. And then I never really thought too much about it because it was in a separate part, you know, of where I lived, you know, it was like kind of, in, you know, either in the basement or the back porch or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then a friend had come over one day and, you know, I don't think I had gone into the basement for a couple of days. And she said, she's like, your entire house smells so good. You know, she's like giving me all these compliments. And I was like, damn it. That's why my nose is messed up because I'm in it all the time.
And that happens, that happens with perfume. Oh, yeah. Like if you wear the same perfume, you stop smelling it on yourself.
Exactly. You know? Like you spray it on yourself in the morning, but like by lunchtime, even though everybody else can smell it, you can't even smell it anymore.
Yes.
Like, nose blindness is very common.
Right.
Moving, getting a separate space was really what helped me, is really what helps me, stay clear.
That's cool. And I imagine that like your biggest fear would to get COVID and not be able to smell.
I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, anytime I get sick, you know, whenever I get sick, like I'm just making stuff and it's like, I can't really like smell it. Oh. So I'm like, you know, labeling is like super important, you know, but,
right.
Like, you know, obviously I'm trying to, you know, keep healthy, you know, just to keep the nose clear. But,
sure.
I'm lucky because I do have a team of people that, you know, help produce the products now. So, you know, if I'm down for the count, you know, I have some people that I can rely on.
Yeah. Or call me. I have a really terrifying sense of smell. Like I can smell my husband like opening a peanut butter jar downstairs when I'm upstairs. It's ridiculous. It's almost a curse.
No, I'm literally the same way. Like my fiance had it. This was a long time ago, but he had I think he had eaten a brat or something for lunch and he had come home and I was like, dude, you had a brat like 3 hours ago. He's like, how do you smell that? And I was just like, oh, go brush your teeth.
I know. It's a curse. You just mentioned your team. So what has changed? How quickly has your team grown over the years? You started in 2012 and now you have a team mm-hmm. of how many people?
Actually, it's a team of 7 because it's like 6.5. We have a customer service person, but she's remote.
Okay. So with your team, I don't know about you, but with me, when I started Majamas, I didn't really think about being a boss. I didn't think about that at all. I just thought about what I wanted to create and what I wanted to do. So how's that working for you? Do you like being a boss? And is it something you bargained for or how do you handle it?
You know, being a boss is hard. So I just like, you know, tried to tap into my past as like as a manager, but it's so different when you're managing employees and, you know, they're connected to something that means so much to you. You know, that can sometimes be the hardest part because, you know, everything feels very personal sometimes. And it's like, no, this is just normal business. You know, it just feels personal because this is like my business versus me working for somebody else and managing a team for them.
Making your employees as passionate and as happy as you are, like when they interview with you or when they come on board, they really do have to have passion for what you're doing if you're small and
absolutely
it's your team, because if they don't, forget about it. I mean, my employees have saved me many times when I've sort of lost my zest for doing something and mm-hmm. you get a little burnt out, especially, you know, when you're running the company. And
totally.
I think you need that team, that crew to kind of be your foundation in a way, you know, they kind of take that up for you, which is,
absolutely. You know, and I think that's what a lot of people don't realize about working for a small business is that, you know, it's not just a regular job, you know, there's so much more, you know, you're so much closer to everything, you know, that involves that business. When that business is small, we end up bringing people on that, you know, are very passionate about, you know, all kinds of different things, like especially like creative things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have people on the team that are artists and people who like to cook and people who like to do crafts and people who just like are really like skilled with their hands, because that's the kind of people that, you know, a small business like ours really attracts.
Your products are boxed in, you know, is it compostable or recyclable cardboard, most of them, or in glass? So
yep.
Why did you take a sustainable approach to creating your products?
This is how I looked at it. You know, I'm like, if I'm going to create this company and really go, you know, all in with what I'm doing, I have to be not just different, but better than what's out there. Mm-hmm. And one of the most consistent things that you see, especially in health and beauty, is that everything is packaged in plastic. And,
I know.
I've talked to, there's been so many companies, like, and these companies are companies that are making natural products. You know, it's like they're already like heading in the right direction.
Right.
So we're like, hey, like, do you have any plans to like phase out these plastic bottles? Because only 9% of plastic bottles that are put into recycling actually get recycled.
I know.
So I'm like, you know, do you have like any kind of like, you know, plans for that? And, you know, every company is like, yeah, but, you know, like, this is what we have. Like, it's the best. Yes. Like, there are a lot of benefits with working with plastic. Like, it is really lightweight. So your shipping costs are cheaper and damage costs are cheaper. And like all the stuff, like, I get it. But like I said, it's like, why exist as a company if I'm not going to put something out there that's better or do what I can, you know, to have a positive impact on this?
Agreed.
That's literally what happened.
And you started back in 2012, right? So you were kind of ahead of your time with that. Because I think with climate change, everyone is very much, you know, since COVID and climate change have collided, and our planet is just really screaming at us. I think you started, and I know I started way, way long ago before it was sustainable to make sustainable clothing.
Yeah. When we first started, like, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend, you know, that, you know, we didn't make, you know, choices that, you know, we wouldn't have made now. But like, we used plastic containers when we first started. And sure, all of that was due to the fact that we just didn't have the money. You know, it's like, right, I started Soap Distillery with almost nothing. So, but as soon, like, I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 years after it was operating, we switched everything over to glass and we just haven't looked back since then.
And that's one of the reasons I buy your products.
I appreciate it.
You know, when people promote their beauty products or even their soaps, whatever it might be, that is a beauty product, but they always like talk about the essential oils. Mm-hmm. Why are essential oils bad for our planet?
Well, I would say like essential oils themselves aren't inherently bad for the planet.
Okay.
It's kind of like, so this is actually, I would say this as well. Like people say that palm oil, and you know, we don't actually use palm oil and there are reasons for that. And I can talk about that too. But I look at it the same way that palm oil is looked at, where palm oil in itself is not inherently bad, but it's how the palm can be harvested that right, has like the bad effects. And essential oils are very similar because we actually use essential oils in all of our products, but we stay, you know, very mindful to use essential oils that are widely available versus some that are not as widely available. And the reasons for that is that the harvesting of the ones that are not as commonly used, it's not as sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like lavender is pretty easy to grow and harvest and you can get tons of it.
Right.
And orange essential oils, citrus essential oils, like cedarwood, like a lot of those things can be harvested and regrown and, you know, it won't have negative impacts on the
right,
environment.
Right.
Once you start thinking about things that, you know, like, again, that aren't as sustainable to produce or essential oils that can be harmful to you in high amounts, like, you know, you can use oak moss in perfume, but if you use too much, it can cause sensitivity. And
uh-huh,
bitter almond has, you know, some poisonous effects if you use too much, you know, so we just stay away from stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I think the communication around essential oils it is very misleading in that way. You know, and again, it's like especially when you're talking about sustainability, mm-hmm. and when you're talking about people ingesting them, it's like I hear all the time of people getting sick from, you know, ingesting essential oils that some company told them was safe to ingest because, you know, I have some health thing and I'm doing this for this health thing. It's like, that is, it's so potent. Like, yeah. Don't put that inside of you, you know? I wouldn't take any medication without understanding what the, not just the benefits were, but, you know, what some of the side effects and what some of the drawbacks would be.
Sure. Even a supplement, like people look at supplements totally. The same way, you know, kind of like harmless. And it's like, no, anything in too much, like vitamin A or something, it could kill you. So what are you doing?
Totally.
I agree. So what is ahead for you, Danielle?
We're just going to keep growing. I mean, you know, there's kind of a lot that is, you know, maybe coming down the pipeline, but we're still on this kind of rapid growth path and, you know, just kind of expanding. And that's just what we want to do. We just kind of want to keep going. You know, I want to see sustainable soap distillery products in the hands of people that would have never otherwise even known or considered, you know, right. a product like ours. You know, like I want someone who is buying, you know, shampoos and body washes and all this stuff, all these plastic bottles mm-hmm. from large companies to sit down one day and, you know, say, you know what, like I'm going to spend a little bit more time looking into what I'm actually not just putting in my body, but what I'm putting down the drain. People start to realize, hey, there are some better options out there. Being able to reach people like that is super important for us. And that's always been the goal. So that's the direction that we're heading is just to continue to reach those people and give them something fun. You know, they're mm-hmm. using all these different types of products because they like all the scents. They like all the things that, you know, you can use a body wash one day and use a different one another day. And you're creating an experience for yourself. Like, it's not just big companies that are offering this stuff to you. Like, little guys are offering it too. And we're doing our due diligence to make sure that we're offering you the best thing, you know, that we sustainably can.
The way that you offer it too, I think the key, and I've said this to other manufacturers and other creatives, is the way that you offer the alternative has to be just as enticing as the big boys doing it. So you have to make it look as beautiful and make it feel more unique. You definitely do that. It must be your marketing brain and your marketing experience, because your site is gorgeous, your packaging, your boxes are beautiful.
Thank you.
Your candles are just amazing. I anyone who hasn't tried any of your products has to hurry up and get out there and do it. My assistant actually, a few years back, got us started with your brand of candles, and she brought one to work and lit it, and we were like, "What is going on over here?
Like, what is that?"
That's it with your candles. There, you have just this kind of density and layering in what comes out of them. That's just so remarkable. So
yeah,
you really do a beautiful, beautiful job.
I super appreciate that. Like, that feedback, I really take to heart, because there has been that time that has been put into that and that care that has been put into that, mm-hmm. because I don't want to put something out there that I wouldn't myself use every single day. Yeah. Like, if I'm not going to use it, then I can't sell it. And a part of me being able to, you know, sell things is like believing in it, you know,
right.
and it,
oh,
I really believe in my products, and it's.
I compare it to like a server at a restaurant serving food. Like, if they're not going to eat it because they've seen the kitchen or there's something they're not very proud of to,
yeah.
you know, you got to want to be able to serve it and put it on the table for people. And it's the same thing when you
totally.
Own your own company and you make a product like yours, or even clothing like mine. You've got to be able to be proud of it and know that you're giving
totally.
People the best that you can give them. Yeah.
You know, I care so much about this. And then when somebody else like reiterates that care, when they notice that and they're like, mm-hmm. hey, you say this is good, but no, this is like legit. That's what really makes me feel good, you know?
Yeah. The boozy scents are just really the thing I love the most. And I think that's because they're so unique. You know, you don't find those at least I don't find those everywhere, unless you're like shopping in a men's clothing store and they've got some something.
There's I mean that's the other thing about, you know, making cocktail scented products is that, you know, we've been doing this since 2012, and I'm finding that there are more like men's lines that have been leaning into whiskey scented things or beer scented things. They're like, hey, this is a really good idea that this person is doing. Let's take that, but only market it towards this very limited group of people.
Right.
And you know, our customers are just, they're not having it. You know, we have so many women that are like, hey, bourbon and beer cigarettes are my favorite scents. And we have guys, you know, that are like, hey, I really love lavender and I really love elderflower. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's just the customers are just kind of telling us what they want.
Well, you're listening, and your products are just tremendous. So I highly recommend them to anybody who's looking for a unique scent out there in candles. And you do. So I keep talking about your candles and your soaps, and right now that's what you're doing, correct? Are you doing anything else besides those two kind of categories?
No, we actually have a few categories now. We have candles, we have soaps, body washes, or I should say hand and body wash. We do shampoo bars now that are rated really highly. Our shampoo bars might just be like our next like big like focus. Just people are just really into the shampoo bars. I have not gotten a bad review on those yet. It's crazy.
I've got to try them because I really get frustrated because I've got really curly coarse hair, and most of the shampoo bars I've ever tried don't really give me that kind of softness. Like my hair feels almost drier after I use them. It's different. So I have to try yours. I'm psyched.
Definitely try it. I would actually try the Chronic, which is designed for people that have more dense, like curly or like drier hair. Like curly hair tends to get drier a lot easier.
Yeah.
So like if you have like curly or coily hair, the Chronic is definitely the way to go. If you have finer hair or are somebody who washes their hair you know every day every other day or so then the shower beer would be the one to go, but I would definitely recommend the Chronic for you.
Oh, I can't wait to try it. I'm down. I'm gonna do it. So where can we find you and your products right now?
So Soap Distillery is in over 200 stores across the United States. So you can kind of find us a little bit everywhere, depending on where you are. Obviously, we sell online. So you can find us online at soapdistillery.com.
Excellent. I'm so excited and happy for you, Danielle. And I'm really proud that you're from Chicago, because I think Chicago gets such a bad rap.
It does. It's such a great town.
It is such a great town. And I think people all hear the negative, which there is everywhere. Every town has its negative. But, you know, to have fabulous creatives like you, you know, doing your thing here in the city, it's just, I'm really proud of it. Thank you so much. And keep doing what you're doing, please.
Thanks. Same to you. I mean, we definitely need more sustainability in fashion. I don't think people realize how much fashion, you know, waste there is out there. You know, you're thinking about plastic bottles. It's the same thing with clothing, you know, and there's only so many things that you can do when it comes to recycling all that stuff. So it's, you know, have to just keep going, you know.
It's true. We gotta outnumber the bad. We have to eventually take over the planet and make it better. Yeah.
Totally.
But thank you so much for doing this for me.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for making this happen.
We hope this podcast has made you more conscious about how you're impacting the planet and that you'll visit our website, majamas.com. There you'll find our sustainable collections and links to our blog, wearemajamaseearth.com, where you can learn even more about our guests and our passion for the planet. Help us out. Follow us on Instagram and Pinterest at majamas_earth and on Facebook at majamaseearth. Care what you wear, and remember, collectively, we have the power to save the planet.